Yes, now let me greet our host and Mr. Chabane. Morning, everybody.
Morning, Sai.
Honorable members, honorable Minister Mzaledi, and my colleagues. Edith, I'm doing my sound check. Is it coming through okay?
Morning, Edink.
The sound is not on. Morning, Adam.
Morning.
No, Adam?
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Mamabula says he's able to share the document, so you don't have to share the document.
Okay, great.
I've made him a co-host and I also made you a co-host.
Morning,
Deputy Minister.
All in order. I missed you last week. Oh, this week, actually.
Where?
In the portfolio committee.
Oh, no, this is the machine in the air.
Oh, how are you, Machine? Are you fine?
Because not a leadership.
Ah, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I know.
Siabong.
Yes. Hey, Male. Levo. Who, Male? Yeah. Mr. Ross, how are you?
Morning, DM. How are you?
Oh, my pila.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm fine.
No,
definitely.
I'm going to test displaying my documents.
Yeah, okay, finish, Adam.
Okay, good.
Mwalo DM.
So how are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm right.
Yeah, hey, yesterday it was tough.
Yeah, hey.
No. It's long enough, let's see.
Yeah. Thanks.
What we have to say.
Thank you.
triple move. You want to score? Oh. Okay. No problem. Umshazo omnyama nomhlupho ngenhliziyo bafowethu, hawo DM.
Aphila mfowethu.
Hayi, strong shazama mfu.
Hayi, uNkulunkulu ophilayo.
Hayi, kuzokunye mngani wami, kuze
ulose. UNkulunkulu ophilayo ubona nje.
Yes. Ba right ekhaya.
Hayi no, ba right. Hey, time manje ngikho right.
So nalirikhazi kahle.
Ya, ya.
Ya, kufuna umncede, umncede umuntu omdala.
Sakamdala, manje lokhu ngibheke eduze.
Ya, kufuna uhlale eduze vele ungasuki. Ya,
sokhuluma after that.
Okay, that's fine.
I was about to call to order. We need to start with the meeting, it's 9 o'clock now. The first on the agenda item, although on the agenda item that I did send, it was not there, is the electing of the acting chairperson. So in terms of rule 159, if the chairperson is absent or unable to perform the function of the chairperson, then the committee must elect among its members one of their own to be the acting chairperson. So the procedure is that I'm going to call for nomination. If it is only one nomination and there's no other nomination, that person will be really elected the acting chairperson. But if there are two nominations, and then it means that no, the committee will have to vote by a show of hands. And I'm sure you have got the system on that side that show you wait and show your hands. I'm going to call for the nomination of the acting chairperson.
Yes, Mr. Don. I nominate the name of Mr. Musa Chabane to be the acting chairperson.
Okay. Ms. Mudise has just nominated Mr. Chabane to be the acting chairperson. Any seconder to that motion?
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to support the nomination of Honorable Chabane to be the acting chairperson.
Okay, Ms. Mlegwa just seconded. Any other nomination? There's no other nomination. Therefore, it means Mr. Chabane, you have been duly elected the acting chairperson for this meeting. Can you please take over?
Thank you, Mr. Matun. All honorable members. I noticed that there are also other honorable members who are not members of the committee who have joined us, Honorable David. You will assist us as we move forward. Let me also welcome the Minister, Aaron Zoledi, the Deputy Minister, Jabulo Nzunza, for accompanying the IEC to this important session. Let me welcome also the Chair of the IEC, Mr. Mashinini, and all commissioners, the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Mamabulo, and all your executive components. Let me also welcome and acknowledge the presence of the legal team from the Parliament and also the Home Affairs and all staff members who have joined us today. We'll note that last week the minister requested the committee to reschedule the presentation on the Concord judgment briefing, and we did authorize that until such that the cabinet has an update on the process. So the minister is here to accompany the IEC There's no much expectation on for any other presentation from the minister and the deputy minister, and that's the intervention that you want to offer. But is the space and podium of the commissioner and his team and the chief executive officer and the team. I'm trying to caution that there may be other questions that may need to be referred to the minister in relation to the topic that is going to be presented on the concrete judgment. We need to be alert that that presentation of the minister will come to the committee once the cabinet has dealt with the issue. Today we're going to receive the Electoral Law Amendment Bill. That's going to be a brief from the IEC. You know that it comes just after the court has ruled on the electoral reform, which will await the minister to come and give that brief. I will request the chief executive, the chairperson of the committee of the IEC, Chair Mr. Mashinini, to introduce the topic, the presentation. You know that the agenda is only one that item. Once that item has been presented, we go straight to the discussion and comment. And as apologies have been noted by the portfolio committee secretary, Mr. Matonzi, the chairperson of the committee, Mr. Advocate Bongo Thomas, is on sick leave, were not able to attend this meeting. If there's any apologies that we need to render, I'll start from the Mr. Matonzi.
Chair, except that Advocate Bongo is not available, there's no other apology that I received.
Can I establish with the chairperson of the IEC, Mr. Mashinin?
Chairperson, may I please be noted?
Can I establish with Mr. Mashinin? I'll come back to you, Honorable Khanyile.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have the full complement of the Commission.
Thank you. Can I invite the Honorable Khanyile?
To all the quick representatives from the IEC. Honorable Maclova is not in this meeting, is attending another meeting. Can the secretary note that? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's note the apology of Honorable Maclova and Honorable the Advocate Bongo. There's an apology that has been rendered. Honorable Mwela has been requested to attend another meeting. He will be leaving the meeting before we conclude. Now it's time that we invite Mr. Mashinini to introduce. I'm not sure whether I must invite the minister to introduce Mr. Mashinini. Let me attend to the protocol, the minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before, yes, you are right, this is the day of the Electoral Commission. We are coming here to accompany them, but also remember that all their laws go through the Department of Home Affairs, so we bear responsibility. But let me just sort of try to correct a few things. This Electoral Law Amendment Bill, the draft was long concluded before the Constitutional Court came. So it precedes the Constitutional Court ruling. That means by the time the Constitutional Court came with that ruling about the independent candidate, this draft was already there. It was already doing its cycle. And as such, when we look at it, it's not really very much affected by the Constitutional Court ruling. Whichever is the outcome of the Constitutional Court ruling, the amendments on the Electoral Law Amendment Bill will still be needed and it will still go on. So I'm happy that today the committee is starting the journey towards coming up with this amendment, which by the way, must be finalized before the local government election next year. So the committee doesn't have much time. It needs to hit the ground running. The second important thing about this amendment is that, as you remember, during last year's national election, there were a number of parties who nearly derailed the election. For instance, the claim of double voting and all that. There are areas in the bill where they are trying to do with that, and I just want members to pay special attention to that, whether indeed what is in the bill will sort of resolve that issue that nearly caused a national crisis by derailing elections. So the bill is going to try and deal with that. You also know there was a constitutional court case about addresses and all that. So the bill is also making proposals on how to deal with all those issues. So this is very important in terms of regulating elections to make them free, fair, and acceptable to everybody. So I would like members of the committee to get onto the job as seriously as they need to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. I'm sure.
Yeah, so I'm sure I'll give over to the chairperson, Mr. Mashinini, and his commissioners. Thank you very much. The chairperson has already welcomed you, together with Ndatema Mabulo, the CEO and his executive. Thank you very much. We are at your disposal.
Just a point there, the Minister. I'm sure you are aware that when you started, you said you are correcting. Let me just leave you that there was no wrong that we were correcting. We're indicating that this presentation come just after the Concord judgment for briefing to the committee. Mr. Mashinini,
my apologies, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mr. Mashinini, you've been invited to lead. Mr. Mashinini?
Thank you, Acting Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Mr. Chabane, Honorable Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Mzoledi, Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Honorable Mr. Nzuza, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee present, fellow commissioners, members of the media and public who are watching these proceedings, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Commission of South Africa, please permit me to express our warm greetings to the members of the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. We would like to convey our best wishes to the honorable chair of the Portfolio Committee, Advocate Bomo, during his isolation. And on behalf of the Commission, let me express our gratitude to this committee for the opportunity to brief the honorable members on the electoral laws amendment bill. And I think it's important that these amendments are understood in the context that has just been outlined by the minister. And the Commission is also indebted to the Minister and the Deputy Minister for their assistance and support in processing this bill through Cabinet and tabling this in Parliament for approval. And what's important is we want to thank the Acting Chief Director of Legal Services at Home Affairs, Advocate Sibele Major, and his team for his assistance and support during the drafting of the bill. And we are also grateful for the help and support of the Office of Chief State Law Advisor and Parliamentary Support Services. Before we continue with our presentation, allow me to introduce the members of the Commission who are present with us. I am joined, honorable members, by our Vice Chairperson, Madam Janet Love, together with Dr. Masubu, as well as Commissioner Mstutu Nyebda. Further, we also are joined by the team from the administration, which is
led by our chief electoral officer, Mr. Mamabolo, and the people accompanying him is the deputy chief electoral officer, Mr. Shibori, as well as our senior legal services officer, Ms. Rita Raff, as well as our commission services manager, Mr. Kelembe. Honorable members, just to recap, as we all are aware, that Section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act mandates the Commission to continuously review electoral legislation and propose electoral legislation and to make recommendations in connection therewith. And this is supposed to be a continuous process. And we therefore periodically review whenever it is necessary to ensure that the legislative framework is up to date for elections, it retains the relevance and the applicability as well as the availability within the ever-changing environment, as well as it closes any previously identified support that may be an impediment to us realizing our mandate. And the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill therefore contains amendments to three important pieces of the legislation, namely the Electoral Act of 1996, Act No. 51, and the Electoral Act 1998, Act No. 73, as well as the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act 2000, which is Act 27 of 2000. The amendments proposed are primarily of a technical nature, and the bill does not contain any new policies. However, this does not in any way diminish the importance of these legislative amendments. Within it are important enhancements and amendments to the electoral process, which are vital to building blocks to help ensure next year's local government elections are free, fair, safe, and peaceful. For clarity among the media and the public listening to the program, let me also point out that this bill does not deal with the recent ruling of the Constitutional Court with regard to the invalidity of the Act. I think it's the point that the Chair has also indicated. Parliament is dealing with the issue of an independent candidate contesting national and provincial elections through a separate process. Honourable Chairperson, in drafting this bill, the Commission consulted with key stakeholders, including the National Party Liaison Committee, which provides its input and full support for the bill. We also engage with information regulator in respect of Protection of Personal Information Act of number 4 of 2013. Apologies. In this regard, then the bill proposes measures to ensure personal information of the voters is further protected. In closing, the Commission wishes to thank you, Chairperson, and the Minister, as well as the Deputy Ministers, including the members of the Committee, for expediting this matter. We are all eager for the bill to be processed by both the National Assembly and National Council of Provinces during this final session, so that we have certainty in the ongoing preparations for next year's election, which are less than 12 months from now. With these brief introductory remarks, allow me to request our Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Mamabolo, to take the committee through the bill in more details. Once more again, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mr. Mamabolo?
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chabane, members of the Portfolio Committee, and commissioners of the IEC. I'm going to be taking the committee through the bill in terms of a presentation that is now on the slides which are now projected. we are amending three pieces of existing legislation: the Electoral Commission Act, the Electoral Act, and the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act. And these are part of the preparations for the local government elections next year. In other words, we're trying to ameliorate technical glitches that are continuously experienced during electoral processes. Hence, this is a technical bill and not a bill raising national policy matters. And the purpose really is to align relevant provision of legislating relating to national and provincial elections and align that to local government so that people's experiences in the voting stations are not varied in terms of national and provincial elections on the one side and local government elections on the one side, as if our electoral democracy is punctuated differently for the two sets of elections. Hence, the Electoral Act is also being attended to in this cycle of amendments. So in terms of the Electoral Commission Act, what are we proposing? We are inserting new definitions related to district municipalities as well as metropolitan municipalities. Those definitions are not in the current Act, the Electoral Commission Act. We are also amending provisions relating to the registration of political parties by providing for registration levels at national, provincial, as well as at metropolitan and district municipality levels, whilst repealing provisions related to registration at the local level. We also are streamlining provisions regarding the process of applying for registration as political parties, as well as streamlining processes for objections against such application and appeals against the decisions of the electoral of the chief electoral officer in respect of registration of parties, and then to deal with matters consequential thereto. In the Electoral Act, we are amending provisions relating to the submission of lists of candidates, in particular, the need to submit the acceptance of nomination. We are also amending provisions related to special votes in respect of elections of the National Assembly, in particular dealing with South African citizens who are either registered on the segment of the voter's roll for persons who are ordinarily resident outside of the Republic, as well as those persons who are in the Republic but who intend to vote outside of the country. We also amending and seeking authorization for the Commission to prescribe a different voting procedure. And we are amending provisions related to the procedure concerning provisional provisional results and voting materials and the accounting thereof. We are amending the Electoral Act further to provide for the limited applicability of the code, perhaps to clarify the point at which the Electoral Code of Conduct commences and the point at which its applicability ceases. We are amending Schedule 3 to the Electoral Act to provide for the adjustment of the sizes of provincial legislature ahead of an election. Then we're dealing with the amendments to the provisions regarding the public access to the voters' roll and the update references to repealed legislation. And we are amending provisions related to allowing voters to vote in voting districts in which they are not registered in respect of national and provincial elections. Now, in respect of the Municipal Electoral Act, we are also including certain definitions for consistency across the three pieces of legislation. We are amending requirements for parties contesting elections by way of party list and for what candidates to contest. Again, importantly, we are seeking authorization for the Commission to prescribe a different voting procedure generally, but specifically for those voters whose names appear on the voters' roll without addresses. And to amend provisions relate to the effect of certain irregularities, and then to delete obsolete provisions. Now, the objects of the bill are as follows. Really, the bill is aimed to enhance existing legislative provisions to ensure free and fair elections as demanded of us by the Constitution of the Republic. The bill further seeks to provide legislative authorization for new innovations in electoral practices so as to improve the efficiency levels in the management of elections and to align the Electoral Act, in particular access to the voters' roll, with the provisions of OPIA regarding the protection of personal information against unreasonable disclosure. Now, if we go into the bill and look at its various constituent clauses, clause 1 of the bill amends section 1 of the Electoral Commission Act to insert definitions of district municipality, local municipality, and metropolitan municipality. And those definitions of those three municipalities are in line with the Municipal Structures Act. They cross-reference, in fact, the municipal structures, and that is important for consistency across across various pieces of statute. Clause 2 amends section 12 of the Electoral Commission Act by substituting reference to the Exchequer Act. When the Electoral Commission Act was passed in 1996, the Exchequer Act was still a relevant and applicable legislation. We know that that has since been superseded by the Public Finance and Management Act. So this is really a basic cleanup. Clause 3 still amends the Electoral Commission Act and revises Section 15 to amend provisions regarding the registration of political parties by providing for parties to be registered at national level, at provincial level, and at metropolitan or district levels, whilst repealing provisions to registration of parties in respect of particular municipalities. And to streamline provisions regarding the process of applying for and participation in applications for registration of parties. So essentially, honorable members, currently you could either register a party at the national level or at the municipal level. When you are registered at national level, you have competence to contest all elections in the country across the three spheres. And when you are registered in a local, at the local level, your participation, your potential participation in elections is limited to the local municipality in which you are registered. So what Clause 3 is doing is to open up the levels at which parties could register. National is retained, a provincial level registration is introduced, as is a metropolitan as well as a district municipality. If you are registered at the district level, then you can contest the elections at that district as well as in all the constituent local municipalities. We have found that if a provincially based party wanted to contest a number of municipalities in the province, they have had to comply with very stringent requirements for registration at national, and the process is less than optimal. So we're introducing an open space for those provincial-based parties to be able to register their party provincially, and for those that are district-based parties to register at the district level. And then the second component of the Clause 3 looks at the classes of people who can raise an objection, rather who can raise an appeal against the decision of the Chief Electoral Officer whether to register or not to register a party. The bill proposes that to limit the classes of people who may appeal to those that had originally raised an objection. Because an application must be published 14 days, and within the 14-day period when it lies for inspection, persons can raise objections to the registration of that party. So the Chief Electoral Officer must then consider the application as well as any objections that may have been raised and come to a decision. And once a decision is made, then he must publish that in the Government Gazette. And if there's any person who remains aggrieved, that person may then lodge an appeal with the Commission. So that appeal is now limited to those parties who have initially raised an objection. Clause 4 deletes Section 15A, which deals with the registration of parties for municipal election, because Clause 3 has already provided for an expanded registration modality. Section 15A becomes superfluous in the light of the insertion of Section 15, the new Section 15. Then Clause 5 amends Section 16 of the Electoral Commission Act by amending provisions regarding the publication of the prescribed notice of application for the registration of the party and provisions regarding who may appeal. I've dealt with this in my input. So here it's clarified. And then clause 6 amends section 23 of the Electoral Commission Act by deleting subsection 3 thereof. And I apologize. That will be the total sum of proposed amendments in relation to the Electoral Commission Act. Now, coming to the Electoral Act, clause 7 of the Electoral Act amends section 1 of that act to insert the definition of voting day. Reference is made in the body of the act to voting day without a corresponding definition. So we'll be adding that. And then clause 8. It's a consequence of the consultations with the information regulator. It removes the existing entitlement of any person to a copy of or an extract of the voter's roll. You know, because the voter's roll bears the details of voters, private citizens. We're removing the entitlement of any person to asking for a copy of the voter's roll or an extract thereof. Secondly, we are seeking authorization for the Chief Electoral Officer to redact any information from the voter's roll made available to parties and candidates to protect the personal information of voters against unreasonable disclosure. I think it's important that we explain that the intention is not to hide the details of voters, but to remove, especially from the ID number, certain components of that number, so that the full 13 digits of the ID are not shown on the version of the voter's roll given to political parties in terms of section 16.3. So this is not to make the voter's roll incomprehensible. That's not the intention. The intention is rather to make it comprehensible, but remove from the 13 digits some digits so that the full identity number is not disclosed. The address will still be there, and those are the attributes that the court intends to have in the voter's roll. So this is again a measure to protect the personal information of voters. Now, if we go to clause 9, clause 9 revises section 24A of the Electoral Act to allow a voter who on voting day wishes to cast a vote in a voting district where he or she is not registered. This provision is critical to the integrity of our electoral democratic system. In that, persons could go to voting stations in which they were not registered and ask to be entered for that specific day on that voter's roll and be able to cast their vote. Now, our experience is that this provision is being used to shop for queues on election day. And this has been the springboard for allegations of double voting, of persons saying, I've been there, I've voted there, and I've been there, filled in a strong statement, and I voted again. Now, in order to ameliorate that occurrence, the new proposal is that you will have to pre-notify the chief electoral officer of your intention to vote in a voting station in which you are not registered. So the election timetable will indicate when that would be. A few days before the election, there will have to be notification to the chief electoral officer to say, I'm registered in voting station A, but on election day, I will not be in my voting district, and therefore I now wish to vote elsewhere. So there will be a pre-notification process that has to be applied so that everybody is aware how many people are going to be voting outside of the voting stations that they are registered, and preparations and logistics can be adjusted accordingly. Absent that, we also run a risk of ballot paper running out because one station which has 100% registered is flooded by 3,000 people on election day. And we end up having our logistics having to chase people on election day rather than having a solid plan based on actual numbers of registered people at each of the voting stations. So this clause 9 is critical to retaining integrity in the electoral process. Clause 10 amends section 27 of the Electoral Act in order to dispense with the requirement for parties to submit a prescribed notice of acceptance of nomination together with party lists, and rather to require parties to submit the notice of nomination, the acceptance of nomination to the Commission upon request in the prescribed manner. When parties submit their party list, it has been mandatory hitherto that the party list is accompanied by an acceptance of nomination in respect of each candidate on the list. What we propose, what we're proposing is that the party must still submit the party list and hold on file all the acceptance of nomination. In the event the Commission requires that acceptance of nomination, they'll call upon it by a date to be prescribed in the election timetable. So the acceptance of nomination is not removed from the scheme, but the requirement to submit it to the Commission is managed differently. The party must still hold those acceptance of nomination on file and submit them to the Commission if called upon. This is important because we have moved largely to a system where our candidate nomination happens online. Now, trying to scan back this acceptance of nomination into the system is presenting mechanical difficulties, and they only serve to clutter the system So in order to ameliorate that logistical difficulty, the party will hold the acceptance of nomination on file until or if called upon to submit them by the commission, either wholly or in respect of certain candidates. and then clause 11, essentially it's a technical amendment which is consequential to this provision. It's basically a cleanup in the light of the principle in clause 10. And the same applies for clause 12, which is a technical amendment to section 30, consequent upon the principle in section 27. Excuse me. Clause 13 amends section 33 of the Electoral Act. Now, section 33 regulates special votes in respect of the national ballot, the national election. So the first thing that clause 13 does is to remove the requirement for voters who will be abroad on voting day to apply for a special vote. Instead, require such a voter whose name appears on the second segment of the voter's roll for persons who are in the Republic to notify the chief electoral officer in the prescribed manner. What this means is that if you are registered in the Republic and you wish to vote outside of the country, you need to notify the chief electoral officer by a date that will be prescribed in terms of the election timetable. And once such notification is received, when you reach the voting station abroad, you don't have to make a fresh application there. Hitherto, you needed to make two things: notify and apply. So we are streamlining that. The only competent requirement in terms of the proposition is you notify. And once you've so notified, when you reach the embassy, the consulate, and so on, you will be entitled to vote. We're removing the two arrangements in favor of just notification. So that's what the first component of clause 13 does. Similarly, if you are ordinarily resident outside the Republic, and you are registered on the segment of the voter's roll for persons who are outside of the Republic, you need not make a fresh application and you did not have to notify because you are already on that segment of the voter's roll. Let's say you are in London, you are on the segment of the voter's roll in London. In terms of the current provisions, you have to notify the chief electoral officer of your intention to vote and make an application on election day. So we find that to be a bit burdensome on the voter. So we are proposing that such persons, you are on the segment of the voter roll in London, you on voting day in London, you go and vote, will make provision, will assume you to be coming to vote in London. Now, the next component of that provision deals with persons who are on the segment of the voter's roll outside of the Republic. Let me give an example. You are registered in London, but you intend to vote in Stockholm, because on the day of voting, you won't be in London, you'll be in Stockholm. In that case, you are required to notify the chief electoral officer of your intention to vote in Stockholm. Again, there's no requirement. Once you've so notified, there's no requirement for you to apply on voting day. So we again here we are removing the twin process of notification and application. In this case, you will have to notify because you are not on the voter's roll for Sweden. You are on the voter's roll for London. Therefore, if you want to vote in Sweden, you've got to notify by a date that we will prescribe in terms of the election timetable. So, clause 14 amends section 38 of the it's an addition to section 38 to provide for the possibility for the commission to prescribe a different voting method. this is provided for in the event the commission wishes to test and pilot certain modalities of voting and so on. But obviously the procedure that is in section 38, there won't be a distraction from broadly, because any prescribed voting procedure would have to be consistent with the framework as it exists. And then clause 15 revises section 50 of the Electoral Act to authorize the commission to prescribe the form required to be concluded at the conclusion of counting, reflecting the result of the count in respect of each ballot conducted at that station. Section 50 bears, amongst others, the count as well as a ballot reconciliation statement or a ballot statement. How many ballots did each presiding officer receive? How many were used? How many were cancelled? How many were disputed? And so on and so on and so on. To the extent that those requirements are in Section 50, it's been very difficult to make adjustments to that count form as well as the ballot paper statements. Now the proposition is to remove it from the Act into the regulations where the possibility for a review and amendment is easy. We will still have a proper ballot statement to show to party agents how many ballots were received at the station, how many were used, how many were disputed, and so on. But that will be dealt with in the regulations. Clause 16 amends section 99 of the Act in order to insert a new provision, 1 capital A, which provides that the code of conduct is binding from the date on which a notice calling an election is published to the date on which the result of the election is declared. This is important for clarity because in some people's minds and some political players' minds, the code applies even when an election has not been called. But that can be because some of the provisions of the code have an impact that limits the rights of persons as enshrined in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. So you can't have it as a perpetual applicable code. It has to have a limited lifespan. And Clause 16 clarifies that lifespan. It commences on its applicability commences on the date on which an election is called, right through to the date on which an election result is declared. Section 17 amends Schedule 3 to the Electoral Act to require the Commission to complete and publish the determination of seats of the National Assembly and all provincial legislatures ahead of every election in the prescribed manner. So currently, in Schedule 3, the determination of the size of a provincial legislature is determined by a certain date, which is 31st March 1999. What that does, despite the profound changes in the population distribution in the country, the sizes of legislatures have not changed. We accept, of course, that there's currently a maximum ceiling of 80, which has been constitutionally determined. That is not an issue. But the size in taking into account demographic distribution has got to be taken account of ahead of each election. Let me give you an example. Gauteng, despite its population having grown phenomenally since 1999, is sitting at 73 members of the legislature. And we are not able to make the adjustment because of that provision of a specific date in Schedule 3. So the proposition is that ahead of each election, we look at the demographic distribution and make a new determination. Now, that is the totality of the proposition in respect of the Electoral Act. When we move to the Municipal Electoral Act, we start with Clause 18. Clause 18 amends Section 1 to insert a definition of a district municipality. We don't have it. We now need to introduce that in line with the principles that I outlined at the beginning, and to delete the obsolete definition of a district management area. Those have been taken out of use by the Municipal Structures Act. We no longer have district management areas. My apologies. So, Clause 19 then amends Section 14 of the Municipal Electoral Act to mirror the proposed amendment of Section 27 in order to dispense with the requirement for parties to submit a prescribed notice of acceptance of nomination together with party list. So, like we did in Section 27, to say we don't need parties to submit copies of the acceptance of nomination. The party must keep them on file. This is a twin provision of that amendment in Section 27. And then Clause 20 does precisely the same thing in respect of ward elections, that we don't need an acceptance of nomination. We'll call on it should circumstances demand it, but otherwise the party or the independent candidate keeps it on file. Now, Clause 21 amends Section 47 of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act to mirror the provisions that I discussed where we are amending Section 38 of the Electoral Act to authorize the Commission to prescribe a different voting procedure for those voters whose name appear on the voter's roll without addresses. Again, this is a very important amendment. Persons who are on the voter's roll without an address, in and of itself, that fact, the fact that they don't have an address on the voter's roll, does not make them lose their right of franchise. All what that means is that there are additional requirements they need to comply with before being allowed to vote. So that Section 38, as well as the amendment to Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act, is trying to say those voters for whom we still do not have an address don't lose their right of franchise, but they must furnish an address before they vote in line with the decision of the Concord in the Mhlophe matter. And a determination will then be made to ascertain whether they are registered in that address that they finished, places them in the correct ward segment. If it does, then they'll be able to vote on the ward ballot as well as the PR ballot. If the finished address places them in the municipality but outside of the ward, it then stands to reason that they'll only receive the PR ballot and not the ward ballot. So that is a dispensation that we had created last ahead of last year's election. We're now introducing a similar provision for municipal elections. And the second component then in Section 47 is to create a enabling provision for the Commission to prescribe a different voting procedure that does not distract from the principles that are outlined in Section 47. For pilots and those types of things on a limited scale. Clause 22 amends Section 84 of the Local Government Municipal Act to remove all reference to a party list submitted by a party from the section. And then the penultimate clause 23 amends Section 87(1) of the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act to mirror the proposed amendment to Section 99. Again, this is to clarify the period of applicability of the Electoral Code of Conduct, that is being the date on which the election is called to the date on which the election of a result is declared. And the last clause then deals with the short title of the Act. Perhaps before I depart the podium, rather the floor, in respect of persons for whom we do not have an address, I think it's important that this background is placed on the table. In 2016, when the Mhlophe matter was active before the Constitutional Court, there were 8.6 million persons who were on the voter's roll and who had a complete address. So that number has since increased from 8.6 million today stands at over 24 million. Because it's important that that context is clear, that we've been able to increase from 8.6 million people with complete addresses to 24 million as we speak. The second category of people without addresses, again, that was in the region of 8 million people who, for whom we did not have an address. That has since been reduced to approximately 1.2 million today. So that provision that I was talking about, persons without address, who must still furnish addresses before they vote, is in relation to those 1.2 million people. So it's not the entirety of the voter's roll or a significant proportion of the voter's roll. But the constitutional principle is that they don't lose their right of franchise. That right remains. All it means, they need to furnish additional details, i.e. addresses before being allowed to vote, and for determinations to be made whether that address places them in the correct segment of the voters' roll. Chairperson of the committee and chair of the ICN minister, that is the bill.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. That's the presentation from the Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mamabulo, the Chief Executive Officer, and the Chair and the Collective of the IEC. We are now going to interact with the brief presentation, Honorable Member. I'm advised that the other members who are not members of the committee but members of parliament who are in the meeting, I want Eddie to advise how many, so that if they want to comment or are able to note them before we start with the submission of input or questions and discussion on the bill. Eddie?
I know that there's Mr. Ndwago, who has always been attending our meeting. And then Mr. Mulder, I'm not sure if he's a member of parliament here or in the legislature. I can just confirm. I'm not 100% sure. And then Mr. Hanif is our member, is an alternate member. Those are the only three members that I can identify on the list.
You are saying Honorable Ntswako, Honorable Harif?
Hanif,
yes?
Yeah. He's a member of our committee, an alternate.
Okay. And Honorable Hendrik?
Yeah, Hendrik. It's Mr. Hendrik, yeah. Hanif Hendrik.
Oh.
And then the other one, that I'm not 100% sure if it's a member in the national parliament or in the legislature, is Mr. Mulder. You can confirm that with me.
Okay, let's, members, we're going to invite honorable members to interact with the presentation that has been made by IEC. And after that, there's an item on the BRRR with the, once the discussions and the responses from the collective team of the IEC will require the IEC to we release members of the IEC so that we deal with another item that has to be dealt with by the committee. I'm going to invite members in the, if there are issues, if the member has no issue to deal with, it won't be a crisis. I'll start with the Honorable Ntswako, if he has the matter, the second. One will be Honorable Hendricks, and then the third will be Honorable Molekwa, and then follow Honorable Tito, Honorable Lokwase, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Ross, Honorable Moela, Honorable Zell, and Honorable Mudise. I will indicate if there's any other member who want to contribute to this piece. Can I invite Honorable Zuck?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that maybe my name must be spelled properly. It's Honorable Mugeni Chwaku, not in Chwaku, Chairperson.
And I apologize to the honorable member. I'm working on the advice of the portfolio committee secretary.
All right, all right. No, thank you very much for the presentation from the IEC. My concern, I think that IEC raised it also on the SPSC meeting, was the issue of dealing with the registered, I think with the voters, maybe if you are not registered in a voting station that you reside on, but you want to go and register somewhere. I wanted to get maybe a clarification from Uprasai Guti. How will we control that? Are we going to be able to get a list of those people that will be voting in that voting station but not residing there? Because we must not run away. I don't want to punch holes in terms of our hidden crowd system as well. I always raise it every time, Chairperson, that there are incidences of double voting. Even though I watered down and I saw the report from the CSIR, how are we going to make sure that with this new act, we are sure that the parties which are contesting are taken into confidence that the person who is not staying in that voting station, I hear the commissioner says that they will pre-register. Will it be able for us to have a list of those people? I even wanted to move further in terms of the NPLC when I was made the submission on the NPLC that why are we not making those things of the ZipZap machine functional so that we are able to electronically make sure that the people who are registered to vote in that area are registered to vote, and those that are not registered in that BD but now have indicated to the chief central officer that they want to be voting there. Why are we not making this thing electronically? So if it is my area of concern, is that they think that how will we ensure that there is no double voting? Something that we have experienced in the 2019 election. I think that is one of the inputs for now that actually stood out on the presentation on me. This double voting and all of that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Honorable Hendrik. Okay. Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation made by the IEC. Chairperson, my comment will be on the amendment of Section 24A. We really appreciate the effort by the IEC to make this amendment on Section 24A so that everybody can have access to vote. But my concern remains to the people who are staying, especially in the poor rural areas, who will not be able to have access to internet to can notify the chief electoral officer regarding their whereabouts. Are there no any other mechanisms to make this process to be accessible to anyone? Maybe the IEC can also look into that to make sure that it covers also the people who stay in the poor rural communities who don't have access to internet. You can send the requisition for access to vote. My other question, Chairperson, the amendment of Section 38, that the IEC should also look into this. As you remember, at some point in the Northwest, there was by election of the minister by election in the JB Max Court.
with regard to the people who did not have addresses and they casted their vote. So I wonder if you look into this matter seriously so that that situation can be avoided in the future. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think my previous colleague has already covered me. I just want to get a clarity on the IEC because of on their last presentation, one of our members told them that they must come and they must give us the statistics of the province, how many people are the people who don't have addresses per province, they must also give us that and also per VG. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lukasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have much to say on this one, but let me just note and welcome the Amendment Act as presented by Mr. Mamabolo. And also applaud the IEC with their efforts of always looking forward to delivering a free and fair election. But I raised my hand before you started noting members to say that I'm not going to deal with Section 122 of the Electoral Act. Thank you.
Can I, you said you raised your hand earlier on too?
Yes, to check if you're not going to deal with Section 122 of the Electoral Act as it was given to us and emailed to us by Brian before the meeting started. I think there's the additional information that came forth that we were expecting IEC to deal with.
Okay. You are suggesting that the IEC must input on that?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Ross? No, sorry, Honorable Kanyile?
Thank you, Chair. Given the presentation by the IEC, I think I only have two questions on this one. When the presenter was making a presentation, somewhere he mentioned that the people that want to vote in an area or a voting district that they are not registered in, they will need to notify the chief electoral officer well in advance to avoid maybe the double voting. What I need clarity on is that does the IEC now have a system that is going to ensure that it monitors the double voting or it can detect that the voter has voted already? And if possible, can the IEC maybe explain to us that the new machines that they are waiting for, what function is that machine going to provide that are different to the ZipZap that they were using previously, so that we can be able to be able to detect if these machines are going to bring any difference. Another question that I have is that has the IEC considered testing electronic voting with voters voting abroad as per aspect rule 13 of the bill to address concerns raised about the long distances needed to travel to embassies and consulates in some countries? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross.
Thank you, James, and thank you to the IEC for the presentations. Just briefly, in terms of that Local Government Municipal Electoral Act and the requirements of the candidate to provide identification, why is that at Section 17.2.C being deleted? And then in terms of the Constitutional Court amendment, in terms of independent candidates, we were informed on the 1st of October that these amendments, we couldn't get an update on those amendments yet because Cabinet has not been briefed. has cabinet now been briefed? And given that we've now missed the projected deadlines for the submission for the amendment, is the IEC going to be writing to the Constitutional Court to request an extension on the deadline that they gave? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mwela. Honourable Lizen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the IEC and its leadership for the great work they continue to do, Chairperson, and in particular the hard work that has gone into these amendments. I think in particular I would like to welcome slide still in clause 8 as it deals with the Electoral Act, where the full ID number of the voter will no longer be shown to protect the personal information of our voters. I think that's really welcome. I also think in welcoming clause 10, the relaxation around the acceptance of nomination form and the requirements. I think that somebody has worked with some of these requirements where we have to submit the acceptance form to the IEC. It's really been an administrative nightmare in some instances, so we welcome those amendments. Okay, but I want to ask, in terms of clause 14 that amends section 38 of the Electoral Act, it states that the bill intends to authorise different voting methods. And I assume this would involve forms of electronic voting, or it aims to address electronic voting. We know that the IEC was in the process of writing a project proposal, but in September we were informed that the pilot project is not financially feasible. So I would like to ask the IEC if they can expand on the potential costs the IEC estimated for this pilot project, and what other criteria did they consider in this regard, and what are the next steps in terms of this proposal? Will it simply be shelved until funds are made available, and will it mean going back to the drawing board, just in this regard? And then slide 5, where it deals with the Municipal Electoral Act, where the Commission speaks about prescribing different voting procedures for voters whose names do not appear or appears on the voters' roll without addresses. I heard Mr. Mamabolo saying it refers only to the 1.2 million voters who will not lose their franchise because they do not have addresses. But the fact is that some people do not have the requisite documentation that will suffice as the proof of address. So I wanted to know what are the potential procedures the IEC are considering in this regard. I heard him saying voters will need additional documentation. But can we get clarity as to what these procedures will be? Does it mean that they will have to, I mean, for example, some people simply do not have an address. So what is the thinking in this regard? And then we noted the Minister's opening remarks, Chairperson, when he spoke about the need for these amendments to be done before the 2021 elections because of the challenges we experienced in 2019, such as the double voting. So like the Honourable Kanyela, I also wanted to get an update in terms of the replacement of the faulty and absolute the tip machine. How far are we in replacing these, and what are the additional security measures or that they will actually come with? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Zil, Co-Chair, Honourable Mbise.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the members would have covered most of the issues. Having regular fair elections is one of the cornerstones of our democracy, and I would want to take this opportunity and appreciate the work that the IEC has done to continuously trying to find ways in ensuring and making sure that they promote free and fair elections at all times. And having said that, I welcome the amendments as presented by the members, and mostly I welcome the fact that they tried to deal with the process of applying in advance when you want to vote in a particular area where you are not residing, and applying in advance and also applying at the day of election. I think they've shortened the process, and it is warmly welcomed, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honourable Janji. Okay, thank you, Honourable Members, for the contribution as you collectively welcome the good progress work that has been done by the collective of the commissioners and the executive at the IEC. I think what Honorable Lopez wanted to raise is on the issue of the essential service amendment. And I think the IEC may need to take the committee into a brief and also request the legal team of parliament just to enter in that space. One is that which will need to refer to the legal team of parliament that since this amendment bill of electoral is going to be advertised and we advise that they're going to be pressed this week. What are the implications that this matter has not been exhausted of this essential services of workers? And secondly, that in this process of engagement, did the IEC interface or exhausted their consultation with the labor, in particular, at NEDLAC level? Because this, I think, are critical matters that have to deal with the workers' rights. And whether this amendment does the extending in terms of the constitutional provision and the Bill of Rights. So if they can enter in that space just to take a brief on the issues. We know that the IEC briefed us previously on the attempt or the intention of workers to go on strike in the last election. What is the status quo now in terms of that process? Now, this intent essential amendment seeks to prevent, and whether also the issues that the workers have been raising in that post, in that area of responsibility have been resolved. So I think it's what Honorable Lokwase has referred to section 112. I will invite the CEO or the chair to allocate responses of members' comments and questions and appreciation of the good work that members of the committee has made submission. Chairperson, you'll guide in terms of your response line. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chabane, and honorable members. I would request the CEO to make the responses to the issues that relate to all the amendments, and then I will provide the sweeping. And then I would wish also that we make a separation the issue that has just been raised by Honorable Lefwase, that we will then deal with that issue separately, the issue regarding the issue of essential services to the CEO. Thank you, through you, Chair.
Thank you. The CEO.
Thank you, Chair. The questions relate that a group of questions that relate to voting in a voting station in which you are not registered. At the moment, during national and provincial elections, it was competent for you just to rock up at any station and ask to vote at the station. You'll be given a SON statement, what is called a VEC4 form, and also provide proof of registration. Then you would be in a position to vote. If you were voting in the same province where you are registered, you'll receive both the national and the provincial ballot. If you're outside of your province of registration, you'll be given just the national ballot. Now, that provision, when it was introduced, it was intended to accommodate persons such as truck drivers who were traveling on work on business, who found themselves outside of where they were living and therefore outside of where they were registered. But over the last few elections, that provision has been used to shop for shorter queues, which culminated in last year's election with claims of persons having voted twice, and placed the electoral process at great risk. Now, we can't allow that. It's going to create a political problem of huge proportions if it's not dealt with. We're not taking away the facility. The facility remains. However, in order to exercise that option, it is now going to be on pre-notification, which means you will have to notify, and we will know how many people are going to be using that procedure upfront. And those numbers, like the numbers of special votes, people who are using special, will be available to political parties. We've always done so. We will know by number how many in which province, how many in which ward, how many in each station. So we will have that. So that political parties themselves can know how many persons, and the countries basically can know how many people are going to be using that facility to cast their votes. The second aspect of that issue was, how do we make it accessible? Like special votes, you can even, we will consider a notification even by SMS. Because currently, even when you want to apply for a special vote at the voting station, you can simply just do it by sending your ID number to by way of SMS. You don't necessarily need to have a smartphone and data for that purpose. You can go submit a notification at your local office of the NEO. So we in developing the system, we will be alive to the need to have it universally accessible, so that it is not just accessible to those that have access to data and related IT resources. Now, on election day, the new voter management devices that we are procuring, they'll be used almost as an online voter's roll. So, which means all our stations, all these VMD machines will be online. And once you've been scanned, it almost crosses you on the voter's roll. And if you try to go to another station, an indication will be given that you've already cast your ballot elsewhere. That is in respect of national and provincial elections, that we're going to use the VMD machines in that manner. So during registration weekends, we'll use this equipment as a registration machine. But during election, we will use it to confirm whether you have not already been scanned elsewhere. Where are we with the procurement? The big adjudication committee met on Tuesday, is meeting again today. They're hearing the report of the bid evaluation committee and so on. So that's where the procurement process is at the moment. Now, that is insofar as the use of Section 24A goals, and as well as how the VMG is going to support the national and provincial elections. Let me come to municipal elections. Because of the ward component of an election, there is no equivalent to Section 24A in municipal elections. In other words, since we introduced the new system of local government in 2000, we've never allowed a situation where people vote other than where they were registered. And that principle proceeds. Because you've got to vote in relation to the ward in which you live, and not influence the outcome of an election in a voting, in a ward in which you are not ordinarily resident. I think the Constitutional Court has affirmed that principle, that you only vote and influence the outcome insofar as it relates to where you are ordinarily a resident. So there is no equivalent provision to vote outside where you are registered for local government. So next year, that possibility of people voting here and going to attempt to vote elsewhere does not arise. We will still use the VMD to confirm whether you have not you have not voted or attempted to vote before. The issue of people for whom we don't have addresses, and the issue that we dealt with in JB Max in 2016. The ideal that we are aspiring is that everybody on the voter's roll has an address. That's what we are aspiring. That's what we are working towards. But the reality is that given the nature of our settlement, it is impossible for everybody on the voter's roll to have an address. It is not going to be possible, even with the best resources and so on, that you have an address for 100% of voters on the voter's roll. It's not going to be possible. As the IEC, we are committed to working to find as many addresses as possible, and currently we are over 90% of persons for whom we have an address on the voter's roll. And we continue to work at that. Nonetheless, the persons for whom the residual component of persons for whom we still don't have an address don't lose their rights of franchise. They remain eligible to vote if they furnish additional information. We're not calling for a proof of address. We're calling for a provision, a ability to say where you live. So you don't have to bring a proof of where you live, because we've not demanded that of any person who's on the voter's roll. We therefore cannot place an additional burden on those who don't have addresses. But you've got to know where you live, and you've got to finish that to the voting officials. Now, how is it going to work? That's the question that has been asked. You get to a voting station, you present yourself to the voter's roll officer, and then he or she realizes that there is no address against your name. to then ask you to proceed to a table in the voting station where you need to finish your address. If you don't have a formal address, you'll have to give a description of where you live. The court in the improper matter did indicate that providing a description of where you live is competent for as long as it will enable the commission to know in which ward you are ordinarily a resident. So you'll say, if you don't have a home, I live under the bridge at the corner of the N1 and John Foster Avenue. And on the basis of that description, the voting officials must be able to make a determination whether that place that you've given is inside of the ward. If it is, then you are, and they'll have to record that, allow party agents to raise objections, if any, and then proceed to give you the ward ballot. If, however, you're coming to a voting station in Centurion, but you provide an address of Soweto or Khayelitsha or Mpepema or wherever, obviously you are in the ward, in the wrong ward segment. We will record the address against your name, but you won't be able to vote in the ward election. So that procedure will be outlined fully in the regulations, as we have done in the Electoral Act in respect of the national and provincial elections. So that's what Section 38 and Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act are trying to deal with. Securing the franchise rights of persons for whom we don't have a voter's roll, whilst complying with the Constitutional Court judgment that before a person can vote, let's know where they live and make a determination whether there's a relationship between where they live and the ward in which they're voting. The statistics related to persons for whom we don't have address are available at, right through to the VG level. They've been availed to all political parties in the National Party Liaison Committee. They will be availed, I'll ensure that they are availed to the committee as well. Then there's a question about whether we, or what is the status with electronic voting and so on. Yes, I confirm that we had intention to work out some pilot during next year's election, so that we can then use the insights from that pilot into drafting a national policy that can be considered for adoption by the country for future elections. In the circumstances, the project is unfunded. As you know, Treasury is cutting budgets. Even elements that were previously funded are now being jettisoned due to the budget cuts and so on. So what will become of this? It remains a project in our radar. As soon as the financial resources are available, it's a project that we will eagerly work at to ensure that we improve the efficiency of the voting process, because that's really what electronic voting should be about. Should be about to make things easier for the voter and to make to improve integrity of the process, as well as to register efficiencies in the manner in which elections are undertaken. The issue of the Concord deadline and the extension in respect of the electoral system. Let's just go one step back. We indicated at the very outset that the matter has been remitted to Parliament for Parliament to enact amendments it believes are optimal to redress the deficiencies that have been identified by the Constitutional Court. And we offered our technical expertise to support Parliament in doing its work. So the lead institution remains a Parliament, and we are a support institution, so to speak. The executive obviously has a profound interest in the matter, and so on. And I guess then that in terms of process, the executive wanted to deal with certain policy issues, and they will present those to Parliament. And the minister is here. Perhaps he can address that further. Insofar as the Electoral Commission is concerned, we are available, ready, and willing to be of assistance to Parliament to advise on the practicability of the different options that may be considered. So, insofar as the Commission is concerned, the issue of asking the Concord for an extension has not arisen. Then I think the last issue the second last issue that has not been addressed is the Section 17(2)(c) that is a copy of the page of the identity document of the voter, of the candidate. Again, increasingly with the use of the online candidate nomination system, it has become a superfluous requirement, because when you enter your candidate's ID number on the online system, it immediately checks the voter's role online to check whether that person firstly is registered and whether it's registered to contest the city of Cape Town. You've got to be registered in the city of Cape Town. So those checks have already been automated in the online candidate nomination system, and therefore to require parties to submit a copy of the ID has been rendered superfluous. Chair, with your leave, I would ask Commissioner Muyata to deal with the issue of Section 122 and Section 86 of the 122 of the Electoral Act and 86 of the Municipal Electoral Act in relation to essential service. And I think just one before we go to the minister, one point. Our legislation already provides for an essential service in those two sections. There are already provisions, so it's not a new introduction that is being proposed, but it's the strengthening of existing provisions. Dr. Mwepra, with your permission, Chair.
Thank you,
Just a second, through you, Chair.
I see now, Chair.
Honorable Chabani, before we proceed with Mr. Miefa, there's probably one last point that we need to also respond to, with your permission, sir. The question that was raised to us.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. The issue was the e-voting abroad. I just think that we just needed to close that loop that the CEO has outlined, that we as a country at this stage do not have an electronic voting capability. So it is not possible that you can actually have any e-voting abroad, nor in the country. And the plan, as was indicated, we had planned to actually do a pilot study to see the feasibility of usage of e-voting. And due to the budget constraints already outlined, we are not in a position at this stage to proceed. Nor are we in a position to know when can we be in a position to move to reintroduce the project, as the CEO was outlining, that we believe e-voting is the way for the future. But as matters stand at the moment, there isn't any funding. And therefore, I just thought it is important, as I indicated, Chair, that I would then sweep after the CEO. That's one issue that was outstanding of all the others that needed to be asked. And without further ado, I'll hand over to you. If you could permit Commissioner Miefa to take us through the issue of essential services. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Miefa. Thank you, Chairperson of the session. I and members, Minister, and everyone present. I think the issue dealing with the amendment to that impact on the LRA is a matter that has been a challenge, in that the two pieces of legislation that we have, the Electoral Act as well as the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act, have in fact declared the IEC as an essential service, or the services provided by the IEC as essential services. However, those two provisions are not the same in both pieces of legislation, and they don't operate in the same manner. And that has presented us with difficulties. What we have sought to do was to amend the pieces of legislation to accord with the provisions of the Labor Relations Act in respect of the period within which the essential services must be considered. Again, banking on the fact that when you limit some of the rights in the Constitution, there has to be a good reason for the limitation, and the limitation must be for a limited period. The Electoral Act, interestingly, Section 112, does provide that the services provided by the Commission are essential services. In other words, they remain from, you know, on any given day. And we think that is suboptimal. The opposite of that applies in the Local Government Elections Act, Electoral Act, in that the services provided by the Commission are called upon as essential from the date on which the notice calling for an election is proclaimed. In both instances, the one is too long, the other does not take into account the period within which the preparations for elections must take place. The only thing we have done in this provision was to say 6 weeks before the
the North is calling for an election, the services of the Electoral Commission will then be essential. And that is for a number of reasons. One is we know that when you deal with an election, you've got to register voters. The registration of voters does not take place before an election, I mean, after an election has been proclaimed, because proclamation by its very nature cuts off the date on which further registrations can take place. We submit, Chairperson Drewma, that these provisions accord with the Labor Relations Act and, in fact, deal with a matter that was hitherto challengeable in that, on the one hand, it remained pervasive. In other words, it has no beginning or end. It's always prevalent. And in the, on the other hand, it did not provide for any period for the preparation of an election. And we are seeking to harmonize both provisions. We submit that these are matters that accord with the Labor Relations Act and should not be presenting problems. I thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Any other responses from the commissioner?
Chairperson, we'd like to thank you and indicate that therefore this is really an administrative matter on the legislation that is under the commission, and respectfully, we do not think this requires any further delay because this is, time is of essence for us to proceed. Noting the question that you asked as to whether was there any consultation at NEDLAC level, we respectfully put it that the honourable members, this is a legislation as it stands. What we're doing, we are harmonizing an existing legislation so that it is more practical and streamlined with what should prevail when we implement the existing legislation. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much for that note. Let me invite Ms. Naidu just to give brief on the process around this matter that has been raised by Honorable Lukwasa, so that members are able to interface with it when the committee is going to sit to deal with this processes. Ms. Naidu?
Thank you, Chair. My colleague, the parliamentary law advisor, when I think, and I discussed this yesterday, she couldn't be here because she had a prior commitment. And from our standpoint, for any legislation to be constitutionally sound, it has to go through a proper constitutionally followed process. Now, before legislation comes to us, before the bill came to us, it had to go through cabinet approval. And then we certify the bill. When we certify the bill, we make sure that each provision is aligned to the Constitution and is practically implementable. We've only got these provisions yesterday, so we haven't vetted them in detail in accordance with the substance to see how it interacts with the provisions in the Constitution, Section 23, the right to strike. Now, I'm going to first discuss the preliminary constitutional issues very quickly because I know we have to end by 12. Firstly, this amendments were not contained in the bill that went for cabinet approval, and secondly, it was not contained in the bill that was published for public comments and then consultation. I've heard what the IEC has to say, and I do agree with them. But when it comes to an amendment that's going to affect the right to strike, I see it as I'm reading those two acts now, and I understand and follow what they are saying about essential services. But they must be consultation, especially with other stakeholders. You mentioned it, NEDLAC, and employees, and other stakeholders like the union, to see if this, in fact, is
falling within Section 36 of the Constitution and can be limited. So even though it seems as if it's from the IEC's perspective that this is not so substantial that it needs to go through those processes, my view, and Suan as well, based on what we received yesterday when we went through it, is that public consultation needs to be done for this provision. I don't want to hold up the bill. The one, the version that you are looking at currently, we vetted, it's constitutionally sound, it's going through all the processes, it will be fine when it comes to constitutional muster. If we let this go through without at least consulting with key stakeholders, it might be challenged and thrown out. And I've heard the minister say, we need to do this before the municipal elections. And that's something we don't want. We don't want delays, court delays over constitutionality process. Chair, I can also indicate that for the next meeting, myself and the parliamentary advisor can give you a more detailed opinion on these provisions in light of the constitution. So we just briefly looked at it because we only received it yesterday. But we can give you a more detailed opinion should the committee require that.
Okay. Thank you. We just wanted that to get that sense of clarity both from your side and the IEC. Also noting that the IEC notes expressing that there's an existing legislation around that matter. And this just to harness the process forward. But we're noting what you are briefing the committee on. What we'll do on this matter, we'll ground it in the committee members to look at this as the submission of the IEC. But now that you are indicating that the bill is going to be issued for already as in process for public comment, we ought to request the legal opinion from yourself to the committee so that we're able to reconcile these issues that we're raising in the IEC. If there's not any other matter around that, before I hand over to request the chair for closing remarks and the minister, the committee appreciates your work, IEC. Collective of the commissioner, the executive, we extend the progress made on this amending bill. We extend appreciation to the entire component of your staff for the continuous status quo of the IEC in terms of its governance, in terms of making sure that the process of the election continues to be free and fair, but also you improve your capacity to make sure that the democracy is thrived. You ought to make sure that you expedite the process of the performance of your new system, as it indicated, that because the local government elections are closer. And I think we must get an affirmed turnaround time, and we're not going to be piloted, so that in the local government elections, when it runs, may not have challenges which are confronting us in the country. We must make sure that also the issue of the addresses, the IEC must do its best to mobilize society for this registration process of people to noting the challenges that have been highlighted. But we, as a committee, take courage on your continuous work. And this brief that you have been presented, and I think it takes us forward as a country, eliminate some of the weaknesses that all of us have identified, stakeholders around, and we think we must do proper work in order to move forward. I'm going to invite the chair just to make a closing remark, and also invite the minister. I learned the chair said you want to sweep. I'm not sure that is an accurate position to do, but closing remarks, and we'll go to the minister and step off the item
will then request the IEC, will list members of the IEC, so the committee deals with the issue that is next on the item. Mr. Mashinini?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On behalf of the Commission, we'd like to thank the Honorable Minister, the Deputy Minister, and the officials, as well as all the Honorable Members for the indulgence. We will await the outcomes of the deliberations by the members. But as matter stands, we are quite happy with the time and the opportunity for us to present and submit to yourselves. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mashinini. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just one remark. Because there have been lots of questions about the issue of double voting, even after the IEC has actually outlined what they put in the act. I just want to emphasize, I know CEO that Temo Mabulo has put it, but I just want to emphasize to the political leaders on this platform and in the whole parliament that the steps that the IEC has taken to make sure that there's going to be no double voting do not necessarily in the act or the amendment only. There are other major steps that are being taken that are not necessarily legislated. Like that issue of the ink, which people have been complaining about that is removable. The IEC is working with the CSIR to make sure that whatever ink we are going to use next time cannot be removed. Secondly, I'm sure you got a very good explanation about the new zip machine, how it is going to make sure that doesn't happen. And lastly, on this issue of having to announce where you are going to vote even before the day of the voting, that there will be a period which is allowed for you to do that. I think from where I'm sitting as the minister, those measures are reasonable enough to make sure that we don't have that problem. Other than that, I don't have any other remark to make except to say thank you to the IEC for this journey, and we are looking forward to members of the committee guiding this legislative process and finishing in time for the local government elections next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, colleagues, members of the IEC, the commissioners and the executive. We will request, we are releasing you from the this meeting. We have to deal with the another item that has to do with the committee and the issues that are there. Thank you very much for attending this meeting. Good luck on your endeavor.
Chairperson.
Can I get the hand there before Minister?
No, I'm just asking, where does that city department, are we also released, or what's our status?
Yes. I want to come back there. Can I get, go back to IEC? It seems to be a hand there.
Hey, person, sorry, I had set my hand, and I don't want to take you back. I was just hoping that the advice that would be given by the various legal advisors would also have the benefit of some interaction with the Commission's legal services in order to ensure that there's an understanding of how it interacts with the other existing pieces of legislation. So that's something for the future for the committee to consider. Thank you.
No, thanks. I think our summary grounded around what you are raising now. Hence, we have requested that opinion from the legal team, and we're indicating that there will be interactive because you are raised that there's an existing legislation around you are just amending. But we need a proper so that we are coherent on the matter. We are coherent on the issues with the stakeholders as we preside over here.
the oversight. I think it's noted. Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks to all the members. Greetings.
Minister, I think we'll also release your officials to the meeting and all the thank you very much, Minister, and your team for attending this meeting with the IEC. Thank you very much until we meet in the next inter-exit.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Matonzi?
Yes, Chair.
You will advise in by quarter past 7 whether all of them, all members of the department and IC have been signed off so that we continue with the B-triple-R.
Yeah, it appears a lot of them that they are not. There is except one. I think we can continue with the meeting. It's only one, so it's the reason as well. Or maybe it's no longer there now.
No, but I'm asking you an accurate, and I need, we're expecting an accurate response from you.
No, I'm saying no, there's only one name which is there. I'm not sure if he's still in the meeting or maybe he's joined the meeting and left, but and I don't know how to remove him. So I'm suggesting that we can go ahead with the meeting.
Or in the attendance of other members.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Adam, I advise that you are rendering on the B-triple-R.
Yes, sir.
The report you sent us either last night or today morning, and I think you must take note that members did not get much time to go through the details on the draft. It may be difficult for members to immediately comment on that. And the point we have raised in a previous meeting, give members time to go through the document. So we will get an advice once you presented on the draft. Yes, Mr. Adam, maybe you will alert members on why the draft has arrived late when the committee is assigned. The expectation is that all members should have received this document earlier to comprehend the details on the and their contribution. And secondly, maybe the time frame when we're going to adopt it, so that we advise when we can reconvene to make concrete input. I know from here we'll submit issues to yourself to change there and there and reconvene for adoption. Mr. Adam?
Yes, sir. Good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson. So, yes, we're dealing with obviously quite a different schedule to usual. So, as per the Chairperson's presentation, the reason for the late submission is we also kind of we're uncertain about the process because there's a member from the House Chairperson product sent on the 2nd of October referring to the Minister of Finance notice in the Government Gazette that gave an extension to government departments to submit their annual reports. And so those annual reports form a substantial part of our DRRR reports, and that has an impact on us. And we're usually required to submit these B-triple-Rs at the beginning of October, but as the departments have been given a two-month extension until the middle of November. So at this stage, we've come up with a draft budget report without the annual report, which makes the process a little bit more complicated. You'll see that our document is almost 50 pages long rather than 40 pages long, not only because the annual report information isn't available, but also because we have to deal with revised budgets, revised plans for IEC, GBW, and DHA. So as it stands, what we're required to do in terms of this House Chair memo is to discuss the draft DRRs at the beginning of October, as we're doing now. What we'd initially planned was for the draft to be submitted today and then for the final to be adopted next week to ensure that the report is adopted prior to the medium-term budget policy statement, which is what is required in terms of our the Money Bills Amendment Act that Parliament complies with. However, since the annual reports have not been tabled, we haven't received briefings on these. The committees has the committees have been given permission to extend their to submit their reports once those annual reports are tabled. We have communicated via the chair to the ministry to table those reports with us as soon as possible, and not as late as 6 November, but as soon as possible. So we're still awaiting those documents. And we will maybe have to arrange a official meeting, like today's meeting, like a Friday meeting, something like that, once those annual reports are revised, that we include them in our budget report, that we can include them in our budget report. And then we have until the 16th of November to submit the final DRR. They will only be discussing the draft, and next week there are a number of possibilities for issues on the agenda, but at this stage we won't be doing the final next week. We'll only be doing it once we get further indication on that or report. So from that said, I will then move to the BRRR draft report that I submitted to members. Again, I'll just give an overview of what's included here already, because we'll have to do the final once the annual reports come our way. So the report starts with an overview of what I've just mentioned, the memo from the House Chair and from Parliament and from National Treasury, as well as the process of revising budgets and annual performance plans that we are familiar with. We received a briefing on the budget and the revised budget, as well as some indication of the revised APPs. So that's the first part of the report. Then secondly, this outlines the usual work, the usual responsibilities of the IEC, of the portfolio committee, and also the work that we've done, including our meetings, our legislative engagements, and our regular engagements and oversight trips, as well as members' constituency work. Then the 1.2 doesn't really change from previous years, it's just the overview of the department and its entities. We then go to the progress on the last five-year medium-term strategic framework this department presented to us. We'll be at the end of that five-year cycle, 2014 to 2019, and they give us a progress update, and that's just to indicate that only half of those five-year targets were met. And then indicate going forward that these are the reasons for those targets being met or not met in more detail. Then followed by the new strategic outcomes for the years 2020 to 2025. So highlighted here again from our budget report that we submitted before. All these information, most of the information comes from prior reports that have already been submitted to the committee. So all those new targets are in there. The discussions around these, as well as the recommendations related to them, are included in the final part of the DRRR, which is where the committee recommends. Or we propose recommendations for the members to adopt. What I must indicate is that all the sections in italics are ones that the committee has not been briefed on yet. So we have not yet been briefed on the revised DHA strategic plan, although they made reference to it in their budget presentation. So this, we still need a briefing on, in addition to the annual report, we still need a briefing on the revised EPP to make, for the members to be able to have recommendations on that matter. So that said, I have included it here just to give you an indication of some of the buyer's targets. So for instance, this is the revised five-year strategic plan directly from the document, again, from the document available on the DHA website. And then the annual performance plan. So we received that briefing. There's an overview of the key performance indicators of the department as presented to us. And then we also didn't receive briefing on the revised annual performance plan. So this is an indication of how we would include those revised targets in our report once we receive a briefing. At this stage, it's very difficult because we don't have a presentation to work with. We only have the actual PDF document on their website, which makes it difficult to include or to type up all these different indicators. So we just indicated here, for instance, this is just the revision on the administration program, which takes up a number of pages, but is there for interest. Once we do the final report, we'll also do the APP, revised APP targets for civic services and immigration services, possibly, preferably with using a presentation which summarizes these issues rather than having to include them all in detail. Then the initial budget vote is presented to us in February. The analysis of that is included as per our budget vote report. After those deliberations, just an overview of those issues on the budget then follows, and as well as the breakdown per program of changes from previous years in budget allocation. As we discussed in our when we finalized this report with the committee, we then make reference to the adjusted DHA budget, which you did present on, and just an indication there of what the limitations are, what how the department is coping with these changes in budget allocation, and yes, so as well as the discussion that. Members and the issues that members raised. So that's the next section in the report. Then from there, these are the observations raised by members. Again, I won't go into detail. These are kind of all the contents of the documents members will remember are essentially to preface the recommendations that we include at the end, which is what is usually considered by the department and by the National Treasury when these documents are tabled. So this is, again, no new information. We then go into the IEC budget and plans, again, to indicate that we haven't yet received the revised plans of the IEC. So we include a section here where we haven't seen the even electronic the online versions of these reports on the APP yet either. So this is directly from the budget road report that we tabled on the strategic targets. The revised targets are still pending for the committee. So yeah, indicated here that we don't have the revised IEC APP. Although they did make mention to it in their revised budget. Then the GPW budget and plans. This is the initial budget vote report issues that they raised with us in February, follows next. And we still haven't included here, as in italics again, the revised GPW APP. We still need presentations on that. So we will make based on the program, perhaps on a special meeting, to have these presentations made available to us Given that we have a bit more time now, our schedule will be very busy with legislation and other matters, as members will be aware. Then we go to Section 32 reports. As we dealt with last week, the Quarter 1 performance is a Section 32 in terms of the Public Facilities Management Act that requires departments to present quarterly financial and performance-related reports to Parliament. So this is the these are the that make reference to the three to the four quarters of last year, 2019-20. Usually we don't include this. We usually only include the financial year's first quarter. But seeing as the annual report is not in there, in this report we've made reference to the last three quarters of the last three quarters of 2019-20, where issues were raised by members. And so this is an overview of the fourth quarter report at the end of last year, or the end of the last financial year. So those issues are highlighted here, reasons for non-performance, challenges, plans going forward, financial reports, and the committee's observations. We then go to the first quarter performance and expenditure report, which we dealt with last week. So again, we had a couple of days to include all of this information and revise it to include in this report, into the late, also one of the reasons for the late submission. So there's all the issues raised by members here, as well as some of the responses, as well as the financials, and then observations. This is followed by the section which usually includes the annual reports. So obviously, as indicated, these matters are still outstanding, and we can't really make a budget recommendation report until we've seen particularly the Auditor General's report on the department's compliance with auditing requirements. So that will have to be added as soon as it's available. We then make reference to all other sources of information made available to the committee throughout the year, the last year, which includes the State and Nation Address priorities and the Sustainable Development Goals are like overarching goals that guide the country, the African Union Agenda 2063. Both of these two continue the same as last year's report. Then we make reference to the oversight visits. There was one to the government printing works. There was an oversight to the Office of Legal Services at the DHA head office. Then our joint oversight to Bay Beach Water Defense. Again, summaries of those reports, as well as recommendations or observations from that. And then we go to committee recommendations. The first part here, 7.1, are issues outstanding from previous budget review and recommendation reports. So there you'll see there's a number. There's actually 15 outstanding from previous years, which is obviously quite high. They're usually around 5 or 6 outstanding recommendations. But the extenuating circumstances around COVID could in part have reason justify some of these outstanding recommendations. So those are then listed here. Again, I'll go through these once the final report is done. It's to indicate here that members can peruse this to see that, you know, some of these issues are still outstanding. The issues mentioned here in italics are the ones for which we haven't been able to verify, which we'll probably recommend on, but which we haven't been able to verify because we don't have the information yet, such as being able to have a clean audit for the DHA and not using significant funds for outsourced contractors. So we can't verify if these are continued issues or not yet until the annual report comes. Then there's the issues of the GPW outstanding, issues of the IEC, again, some of which we can't verify yet. And then we go into the actual recommendations. Oh, sorry, this is actually for 19, for 2020. And so here we've extracted from the various reports highlighted in the report the issues raised by members. So we have 19 proposed recommendations for the DHA, four for the IEC, and seven for the TBW. These I can go through in detail. I'll take guidance from you, Chairperson, whether I should go through the recommendations in detail or I should allow members to peruse this and we deal with the recommendations once the annual report has been tabled or been briefed on the APP and the annual report. I take your guidance, Chairperson.
Thanks, Mr. Adams. Let me also take guidance from members on the process. Can I establish first, Ms. Adams, this report, you have until when to adopt it?
At the latest, the 17th of November.
Okay.
But if possible, before that, is what on House Chair said.
So we still have enough time to make comments on the document input and so on.
Yeah, depending on how late the DHA submits their annual report.
Okay. So the recommendations will obviously come from the annual report and the revised ATP. Okay. Members, that is the draft that will be sent to look at the process, I think Mr. Adams has outlined. I want to suggest, and I think I will take counsel from yourself, members of the committee, why is that since this matter has been, this report, the draft has been sent to us, and he has made two areas that we may consider. One, that his final recommendation will be once the annual report has been presented, price plans and the revised APP. We can use it as a working document, taking also the notes that he has highlighted on the overall body presentation. So we have, I would advise that we can take this report, go and read it, make input. And once we have received the recommendation, this document presentation will then have to come and finalize. Thirdly, that AD, I think you may need, because the ACDG that indicated that they are ready to present the revised APP and enterprise plan. I want to request you to advise when that will be possible so that we are within the deadline of the BRRR, and I think this will go into the process of debate, if I'm correct, Adam, in the house. Yes, in the house. Can I invite members to just to guide on the proposal we're putting forward? Honorable Ross, can I start with you?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just on the comment that these reports are due on the 17th of November, my understanding is that the deadline for the annual report is by the 17th of November. Can I just get clarification if that's true? If that's true, and then you only get an annual report on the 17th, then how will you complete this process? Shouldn't there be a gap between the absolute deadline for the annual report and the deadline for submitting the BRRRs. But otherwise, yes, we need to get those annual reports to fully consider this BRRR and finalize it.
Okay. Honorable Mulekwa?
Honorable Lizette?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I agree with you that you should use this time to go through the report, make notes, you know, come up with our own suggestions and inputs, which we can then forward to Adam. Yeah, because of course, you know, we can't finalize at this stage without the APC, the ad report, and even the AG report. So I think we should use our time wisely, as you have said. We can go through it, make our notes, and finalize once we've got all the information. So I do support you on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Tito? Honorable Tito? Honorable Tito? Back now, Honorable Tito and Honorable Tito, they have left. Honorable Kate?
Thank you, Chair. I concur with the speakers that came before me and the suggestion made by you. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Tito and Honorable Modise, they left with the IEC and the PSO without our authority members. Must note that. Adam?
Yes, sir. In response to Honorable Rose's question, yes, the House Chairperson's memo gives us the week after the submission of the annual report, which is on the 16th of November, to finalize the BRRR report. So we have this from the 17th to the 19th of November to finalize our report. So we have a week after this. It's still tight deadline, but it will be possible. And then just to indicate briefly that some minor changes that I made whilst going through the report. I'll resubmit the slightly revised draft to members for consideration. So ignore my previous email and rather take the one I sent you now, please.
Okay. Thank you, members. I think we are clear now on the process that's going to unfold. Thanks, Adams, for the detailed brief on the issues. The issue which we also need to take up, Mr. Matonsi, with the legal team, is around that matter which Honorable Pastor has raised of Section 122 in line with the IC and what appear to be the submission view of the an IEC with reference to the existing legislation that has to do with the essential service. So we request you to schedule with the legal team so that the committee fully comprehends this process and proper guidance so that we're able to guide the Department of Home Affairs and the IC on this matter. Thanks, members. If there's any announcement around next week and around this process of the bill, Eddie.
For next week, originally on the program of the home meeting, we're supposed to adopt the report, so we're not going to adopt it. And then the last time when I spoke with the chairperson, he indicated that he wanted Mr. Lekota to brief the committee on the policy in terms of the of COPE, because they have already worked on the B to address the issue that was mentioned by the Constitutional Court on the participation of the independent candidate. So for next week, as of now, there's going to be presentation by Mr. Lekota on the policy intent from COPE. then we'll take out the issue of the consideration of the PRRR as earlier indicated. And then also that the bill, this electoral laws amendment bill, is going to be advertised on this Sunday, on Sunday time, coming Sunday, and then during the middle of the week on the other newspapers in all official languages. That's all for me.
Okay. On the issue of the what you are raising, I'm sure it was not processed in the MENCO. Let's refer back there and advise members correctly. And secondly, let's get this matter of the IEC and the legal team edit, so that we are able to deal with it. Let's interface with it and the chair and the legal team. How best we are going to deal with this matter? We close it. And I am advising that go back to the chair and process this issue that you are raising that must come on Tuesday.
Okay.
And then we inform members correctly before today's Thursday, this Friday, before tomorrow, close of business, on how these matters are going to be handled. Remember, there's a process which was established on how we're going to deal with this matter, both of us and the cabinet. Let's leave it at that point. Thanks, members, for attending this meeting, and really appreciate the good work, contribution, and the continuous collective effort that we're putting on the work of the committee. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Tito Cheche, I was not out of the meeting. That my gadget was giving me problems the time Adam put in that the screen and everything, and then I couldn't get out to also make my comments. But I also concur with what the members have also said. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Tito, mm-hmm. for that. Alex, can I get some details back also because of the network? Okay. Thanks, members, for attending this meeting. We'll get the highlights on the two issues that were referred to MENCON, and the AD will interface with the chair, and will request urgent guidance on the issue that is raised of the section 112. On how we're going to handle it as the committee. Thank you, members. The meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Hi, Co-Chair. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?